Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it this week. Wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsors this week, HelloFresh, Brooklinen, and Squarespace.
Squarespace!
They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who's cruising into the end of the year, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. I'm so excited to watch the ball drop here on the year 2076, as 2077 is just mere moments away. The countdown has started.
Yeah.
My 80 gig day one patch hard drive space is ready, or whatever it's going to end up being.
Yeah, it's the last episode before 2077, the year we've all been anticipating.
Everything looked great in that year. I don't see anything wrong with it. Everybody looks happy. It looks like
my understanding is that that'll be the year that all the rays are traced. That's my understanding. Oh my gosh, I'm excited. What a time. What a time to be alive this end of 2020. We got, if ever there was a time to play, it is now. We have too many games. There's so much to talk about. It's the end of the year. It's the crunch of games releasing. But luckily, we have an awesome guest to get through all of it with us. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm so excited because DLC stands for debuting the Lego cast. Because from the brand new Bits and Bricks podcast, as well as the Long-Legged Beasties Horror Podcast, you know him, video game journalist extraordinaire Brian Crescente is back with us. Hey, Brian.
Hey, man. I noticed you said that they knew me, but you didn't say that they loved me. That hurts.
Oh, they love you. Believe me, no, they love
Brian,
you.
Brian, that was just my request. I like you.
I got it. It's not.
I got that slip of paper, but I saw it. It didn't get passed all the way back to me in the back of class, so I didn't have a chime to check yes or no. So that's me. I'm sorry. That's my
fault. Okay. It's okay.
You know what? If they don't love you before the show, by the end of the show, love. I promise. I know it. I have no doubt. No doubt.
Fantastic.
Let's start by talking about this, what seems to me like a dream job. You're now hosting the brand new, I mean, it's debuting like this week, the brand new Bits and Bricks Lego podcast, which is the official Lego podcast talking about Lego and its digital forms and sort of the history of Lego. What an amazing job.
Yes, it is. It is. So it's Lego Games podcast, and it's a podcast dedicated to sort of, it's keyed up to the 25th anniversary of the very first ever Lego video game, which I'm sure nobody on this podcast has ever played or even listening. It was for the Pico, which right there puts it in
Pico.
The Sega Pico, which is an educational. Oh, yes. And it was released only in Japan. So that window keeps getting narrower and narrower. But the one that people will remember, the second game, was Lego Island. And that's the one that I think a lot of people have fond memories of. But yeah, tons and tons of Lego games out there. And
did you know about the Pico Lego game before you started this project? Did you discover that, or was that something you were aware of?
I was completely unaware. In fact, yeah. If you had asked me before I started doing this, and I've been doing this for a little bit now, I would have, I knew probably in the back of my head that there were other Lego games, but in my mind, TT Games was like, they're the ones who made Lego games.
It
was
right. Lego yeah.
games. And like, that's, you know, they make fantastic Lego games, but that's absolutely not the case. There are tons of other games that weren't made by TT and are continue to not be made by TT. So it's a very broad swath of games out there.
So you learned a lot in this process as well. And I was reading some of the promotional material. There's a ton. It says what? Over 275 people. You interviewed 120 people. 275 people were researched. More than 50 total games and 11 terabytes of data collected and archived.
Yeah,
it's insane.
It's so funny because it's like the half of my job, you know, journalism is sort of two jobs. It's reporting and writing. And so like my reporting switch got stuck on. I kept reporting and I never did any writing. It's been really interesting. I've been doing this for, I don't know, I think 15 months now. It's a contract job. So I do other stuff as well, but it has been a big chunk of what I've been doing. And I think it's amazing that the Lego group was interested in this because they really respect their history and, they have, a lot of amazing stuff they do. They have something called the Idea House. They have this underground archives where they keep all of their, you know, all the things that have to do with the Lego group. But one of the things that they, I think, weren't as, weren't as good at collecting was sort of the digital stuff. And so things happened to align and I'd been sort of bugging some of the people at the Lego group for a while about writing a story about the history of Lego games. Little did I know. And 25th anniversary was rolling around and they were like, hey, you know, would you be interested in coming and just doing some research and, you know, we'll see what happens after that. But we actually are very interested in sort of archiving some of this information. It's a dream job, but it's also very weird because like I'd be finished with an interview and I would just want to explode because it was like, oh my God, this is so amazing. And like, there was no one for me to talk to about it.
It was all under wraps still.
Yeah. So they decided that they wanted to do this podcast and, with the original project and with this one, I've been working with this, talented documentarian named Ethan Vincent, as well as a bunch of people at Lego, at the Lego group. And, basically we started coming up with ideas for a podcast. We ended up with something that's kind of like an audio documentary because it's like a bunch of interviews. We then cut them up and, present all the facts, but we also include interviews and things like that and have come up with a lot of really interesting topics. It'll be a total of, I think, 11 of them. And the first one airs this week, which is – I'm trying to think. I think it airs the – I shouldn't say air because that's not, in fact, true. It's not airing. There will be no air involved. But I think it's the 9th. And
there's AirPods. So I think, you know, perhaps.
But I can't go into details, but I can tell you it is about, the work that the Lego group did with Mojang. On a Minecraft game involving Lego bricks that was never released. And we got like full access. I actually even played the prototype, I guess. But, was able to, you know, get all the details on what it was, why it didn't happen. It's a sort of level of detail and access that you don't expect to get. Like it's very rare, I think, for a studio to say, oh yeah, this is why it failed or didn't happen or whatever. And that's exactly what we were able to get, which is amazing, I think.
That's really cool. So not only did you get to play or see or research or find out about all these obscure Lego games, as well as the Lego games we all know about, on a probably a level of detail that none of us have experienced, but also all of these what ifs, all of these, you know, might have beens, is that sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. And it's interesting. It's actually, I had this funny moment where I was talking to the people at the Lego group. There are like three or four people I deal with pretty frequently. And I was asking for some information and they were like, Brian, you're the only one who would know that. And I was like, that's weird.
No, that's what you want. You want to be indispensable to the Lego Corporation.
Yeah,
you know?
It's such a weird feeling though, right? To be like, how did I become an expert in a year and a half on this thing?
That's amazing. Well, I'm excited to check it out. It's called Bits and Bricks, right? With the N, Bits yeah. and Bricks. And,
Bricks and Bricks.
Anywhere you get podcasts, right?
Yeah, it'll be on all the things. It's also on Lego.com. They actually, if you go to their games page, they have a neat page set up for it. So it'll have all the podcast episodes and really cool timeline on there that has sort of highlights 26 games from the last 25 years and sort of why they were important to the history.
Very cool. All right, well, let's jump into the show now and start the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send us comments, questions, reviews, your own personal reviews of games. If you think we overlooked something that needs highlighting on the show, send it to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also visit our subreddit, that's 5x5dlc.reddit.com, or our Discord, which is 5x5dlc.discord. I think, was it CC? It's not .com. Anyway, the Discord is 5x5dlc. Brian, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Wow. I'm going to cheat and use one that I spotted that I think you guys were looking at as well, which is the fact that Oscar Isaac is going to be starring in Solid Snake. As Solid Snake in the Metal Gear Solid movie, which I think is amazing.
Yeah. What a thing. The Metal Gear Solid movie, which I think was announced all the way back in 2012 as being a movie that was going to happen. Is still, I guess, several years, well, maybe not several years, but it's still a ways out. Like, they haven't started shooting. There's no announced release date. There's no none of that stuff. And the movie industry is topsy-turvy right now, so who knows? But that doesn't mean that there's not going to be this Sony Pictures Metal Gear Solid film. Deadline and The Hollywood Reporter are both confirming that Oscar Isaac is going to play Solid Snake. So, first of all, what do you think, Brian, of a Metal Gear Solid movie? What should it be like? Are you excited about that? Do you think it has the potential to be a great film? And then, how do you think Oscar Isaac will be as Solid Snake? Do you think it's a good choice?
So, coincidentally, I've had the luck of interviewing Ari Arad, who is one of the producers on the movie. His father, Avi Arad, is also a producer on it. I've also interviewed Oscar Isaac and Jordan Vaught Roberts, who is the director. So having
all the pieces,
none of them about this. But no, actually, I did talk to Ari about this, and I think like these are all good pieces for a excellent puzzle. I don't know why I'm sticking to this puzzle analogy, but I'm going to. Obviously we all know Oscar Isaac is amazing. And like, I'm sure any role he takes on, he's going to do a great job. So I'm not worried at all about him. What's interesting is when I was talking to Ari about turning video games into movies, this was a few years back. One of the things he said was that it's his firm belief that you really have to, in doing this, you have to try to capture the feel of playing the game and not necessarily just retell the story.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, it was a very relatively short conversation. It was an interview, but it wasn't, you know, this long drawn out conversation. But I was left with the feeling that he had a good idea, a good handle on how to approach this and understood that as he and his father did with the comic book movies, because they were some of the first people to make good comic book movies, that, you know, this medium has to be approached in a different way.
So you're saying that when in the movie, when Oscar Isaac fights Psycho Mantis, you have to leave the theater and go into a different theater.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And actually, when you go to watch this movie, you're going to end up, in fact, playing the movie for 3/4 of the movie. Do you get the deep cut I'm doing there? Yeah. I'm flipping it a little bit.
Right. Yeah. It'll be much more playing than watching.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But Jordan Vaught Roberts is like, that guy loves video games. And if you've ever seen anything he's done, you could tell. He's like, it's in his blood. He is part of a group of directors coming up now who, you know, live and breathe video games. And because of that, I think their creations are sort of already sort of soaking in that culture. So like, go watch Kong Skull Island. There are so many callbacks to different video games that are really subtle, but they're in there. And like, if anybody can make this work, I think he can make it work.
Kong Skull Island, I think, is super underrated. It's actually a very entertaining movie. I had a good time with it. Yeah. Christian Spicer, I know you are a big Metal Gear Solid fan. And I guess we're in the post video games make bad movies world, right? We've kind of transcended that. There wasn't, I don't think, one movie that did it. But in a year where one of the best movies in theaters was Sonic the Hedgehog, I guess you have to admit that we're sort of post, you know, video games automatically equal bad movie. So what do you think about this? Do you think the Metal Gear Solid franchise makes for a good film franchise?
100%. I mean, look at Bond or Jason Bourne or, you know, any of these, John Wick, Atomic Blonde, probably more so than John Wick, but Atomic Blonde more so based off of Coldest City, the graphic novel that it's based off of, in terms of like being an espionage and thriller in that regard. But yes, I mean, and as Brian, you know, alluded to in reverse, the games are very cinematic. They're not, it's not like, how would you visualize that Donkey Kong as a movie? It's like, you can see it. So I think the challenge will be, again, as Brian mentioned, the challenge for a lot of these things is bringing it into a new medium. But I also think that Oscar is now, or they're not out yet, but poised to kind of be on that throne, or at least on the Olympic podium for, it feels weird to call it geek because it's just mainstream. You can't be like, I'm such a geek. I love Avengers. And it's like, yeah, everybody did. It was huge. But like, so he's Star Wars, he's Dune, he's Moon Knight, he's Snake.
That's a pretty good pantheon of geek icons.
Oh, yeah. My favorite part about this announcement, though, are and it's, you know, blame, air quote, blame Kojima, where it's like Oscar Isaac plays, set to play Snake. Here's a picture of Big Boss. Here's a picture of, it's like no one, because like the game that Kojima played for so long of who is Snake? Who is Solid Snake? All these different snakes. And it's like, that's not the character. Is it the character? I don't know. What movie, what story are they telling? But it's
we definitely need a Kurt Russell cameo as Big Boss, right?
Or just somewhere, right? Like, he's one of the snakes that this snake taps into and he gets the powers of all of the snakes that have died in the past. And you get, I'm just kidding. But somewhere he's got to be in there.
We need that.
But maybe as a big planet or something.
I mean, you're kind of alluding to the fact that the storyline in these games is, how shall we say, a little complicated. Yeah, maybe that's the kind way to put it. I guess we've gotten in the post-Marvel world where really esoteric geek concepts are now mainstream. I guess it doesn't matter, but does it matter, Brian? What do you think? Does the pure kind of craziness that is Metal Gear Solid, should that be the movie, or should they strip that away and kind of make it a more conventional type of espionage film? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think they would be best served by not trying to recreate an existing storyline. I'm trying to say this in the kindest way possible of a Metal Gear Solid movie. I think those movies are games. See, it was a Freudian slip. Those games are a little bit convoluted and hard to follow. And I think what you do, and I think it goes back to what Ari was sort of alluding to, and that is you have to kind of get the essence of Metal Gear Solid and turn it into its own thing. Like, also, I don't know if I want to watch, any video game being retold as a movie that it's a one for one, plot. Like, it's not like a book. I don't want to see that happen. I don't find that interesting. I don't think.
Honestly, that's my feeling about what we're hearing about the Last of Us TV show. I know they keep saying it's going to be fleshed out. There's going to be new characters and the world is going to be even more robust and there'll be side stories. But
I heard there's a whole episode about a podcast host that just kind of weasels himself into the episode. He's in the background at one.
You hope.
You just made such a fuss during production that they gave him a whole episode. I've heard it's me.
I've heard it's me. I've heard it's me.
Isn't that how the secret works?
I don't know. I don't know how these rumors start. It's me. No, but seriously, that's the idea, is that it's the first game, right? Is at least the first season of this TV show. And you'll have all these extra things evidently that'll flesh it out. But my whole objection to that concept in theory, because we haven't seen it happen. Maybe it'll be amazing. Maybe it'll be wonderful, but it's not like doing a comic book. It's not like doing a novel where, oh my gosh, this thing that has only existed in my head is now flesh and blood and moving around. In a video game, I've already seen as close to photoreal as video games can get, trying to present that with actors acting and, dialoguing and all the things that happen in movies happening already in the video game, especially Naughty Dog's video games. So it worries me a bit that it'll just feel a bit like a rehash. So I don't know. I agree with you, Brian, is what I'm saying.
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. It'll be interesting. It sounds like this Metal Gear project is a ways off and, it remains to be seen, but Oscar Isaac certainly is like, signing him means that he thinks the material is strong enough that he wants to be associated with it. So I think that already is a kind of a vote of confidence too.
Yeah. So. I mean, they've got a good lineup. So fingers crossed.
Yeah. Christian, what is your story of the week?
Since it is the eve of a new year, as we are winding down 2076, I think what's really interesting to me is this story, and it's been talked about before, and now it's kind of coming closer and closer. But Cyberpunk 2077 having a multiplayer component, not a mode, piece, chunk, not at launch, but soon, thereabouts. And they're talking about it a little bit more, calling it a separate dedicated production, a big production, right? It started as, I think it was just like a concept that a small like skunk group was working on or something like that. Like, then it became this bigger thing. It got a bigger budget. It's not going to make launch. And I think what makes this story equally as interesting now, as we're on the eve of the single player game coming out, is also as it relates to Red Dead Redemption 2, or I guess Red Dead Online, getting its own standalone release, like literally separate from the game now. And I'm curious, Jeff, your take on kind of that idea of a multiplayer component and how tied it needs to be to the game at all, or if it can live on its own, or does it depend on getting people into the narrative first to come, do whatever they're going to do around 2077?
It's an interesting idea. I think we're seeing this more and more. I mean, even Call of Duty has sort of flirted with this idea of making it two distinct products. And I think you're going to see that with Halo a bit as well, where they're kind of talking about these things being their own little worlds that interact in ways, but are mostly standalone products. And we've seen obviously great success with those Rockstar games you mentioned, specifically GTA 5, where, it constantly sells more copies than anything in the known universe, primarily because people are playing that multiplayer, and the multiplayer wasn't there at launch, right? This is the Cyberpunk 2077 template, I believe, is that they're going, hey, if we build a compelling multiplayer component and release it, 6 months to a year after the single player game, it just lengthens the lifespan of our game as it did with GTA 5. Because GTA 5 came out, it was a big single player game and sold a bunch of copies. And then, you know, it sold exponentially more because people are into the multiplayer. And if they can replicate that kind of success, then I think that's what they would want. It's fascinating. Brian, what do you make of this?
I mean, yeah, you look at the impact that Grand Theft Auto Online had on Rockstar. That game, how old is GTA 5? Like, how long is that? 7 years? No, I think it's
something like that. Yeah, I think it might be more. I think it might be 8.
Yeah.
Did it launch the same time we started this podcast? Like, went like hand in hand.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's still raking in cash. And, you know, it's because of, it's not that people are going out to buy GTA or I think you can now buy it on its own. But for a while, it wasn't that people were going out to buy GTA 5 to play the story, which is great. It was, I think they were doing it because they wanted to play online. And like, you know, you in this era of sort of online, constantly connected, always evolving gaming, I think it's crazy for you to invest the amount of money that CD Projekt Red is in something like Cyberpunk and not do a massive online component. Like, you have to. And yeah, it could just print money for them, like huge amounts of money.
Well, you were correct. It was 7 years. September 17th, 2013 was the release of Grand Theft Auto 5. So we're past a 7 year mark. And it's still, you know, it was like in the top five MPDs, you know, that entire period of 7 years.
It is crazy. And like, it's so easy to forget. It's like a, you know, it's like how people forget sometimes that Roblox is as big as it is.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, when you actually look at the numbers, it's like, it's astounding that that game is still doing what it's doing 7 years later. And like, it's coming out online, is going to be available on next gen, right? I believe they've said that.
Yeah. So
that would mean it's gone across, what, three platforms? Three generations?
Yeah, three generations,
that's,
yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
It is crazy. Yeah, and that was like one of the big announcements. It was like, we're getting GTA 5 online on next-gen platforms. It's like, wow. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, if they can replicate that, I think they would be very, very pleased, of course. And it'll be interesting to see what that multiplayer is. You know, It is a first-person game. Is it going to be a first-person shootery kind of kinetic experience? Is it going to have elements of that role-playing system in it? Is it going to be a big open world like GTA's is? You know, exactly how all that work, I think, remains to be seen. They say there will be more news about the multiplayer experience for Cyberpunk sometime in Q1 of 2021. But they say the actual standalone product may not even hit in calendar 2021. It may be a 2022 release, which is, again, indicates that they're in this for the long haul, right? That this is, they want that 7 year lifespan that GTA is showing is possible. So I think it could be cool. I mean, I'm much more excited about a single player game. And I would be much more excited if they're saying you could play through Cyberpunk co-op with people or have a shared universe in some way of the single player content, which I don't think this is what that is,
right?
Because I'm just not, you know, not as into the competitive multiplayer side. But, you know, a lot of what makes the GTA experience so compelling for people is that it is everything, right? It's a big sandbox that allows you to have all kinds of wild different kinds of fun. And when you build a world that is as robust and detailed as it seems they have done here, maybe that's the draw. Maybe it is just letting you run wild in that crazy world that they built. And I think that could be pretty fun with a bunch of friends. So yeah. We'll find out, I guess. We'll find out. Christian, are you excited about this?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of questions still, right? And I kind of, as they've been talking about it, I think it leads to more questions, which I think is good PR and hype building. But I think it has the potential to be very cool. And I think they've shown as a studio, while not multiplayer, but their willingness to support games over the long haul in big, meaningful ways. So if they're going to put those kinds of resources behind doing something multiplayer and Cyberpunk, I think you have this awesome looking city full of places to go and things to get, you know, places to get into trouble. I think it could be a big hit.
Yeah. Well, as you've mentioned, Christian, a number of times, we are on, you know, Cyberpunk Eve. supposedly that I've heard that we'll be getting codes early next week. So maybe even by the time you all are listening to this episode, we'll be playing a bit of it, but we'll all definitely be playing it by Friday, which is the 10th when it is releasing. Although, you know, you never know. There could still be a delay at the last minute. You never know.
I mean, they put out that worldwide map. Like, it's the 9th at 4 p.m., I think, here in LA. Yeah,
you're right. Like, it is the 9th at 4 p.m. That's right. In North America, it is. That's exciting. So that being said, having played zero of it at this moment, I thought it might be fun for all three of us to kind of go on the record and make some predictions. Do you think, Brian, this game lives up to the hype? Do you think that you are going to love it? I mean, are you going to play it? I guess is the first question I should ask. And what is your feeling about? I mean, it just seems like this is one of those meteorite hitting the earth kind of game releases. Do you
I
think
hope
it'll
not? That went very bad last time.
I wouldn't be able to play it. Yeah.
No, I don't know if you guys heard, but CD Projekt Red has some weird, weird promo stuff going on. What do you think, Brian? What's your prediction on this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I definitely want to play it. I'm all on board. However, I have not finished a single Witcher game, and it's not because they're not fantastic games. They are fantastic games. It's that I just don't have the time. Like, I can't, yeah. The investment is just, and I've purchased The Witcher on every platform thinking, okay, maybe if I'm playing it on this platform, I'll have time. Yeah. And it's like, no, it doesn't come with the time machine.
Right. But on the Switch, I can just take it wherever I want. Yeah, yes, exactly. You still don't have time to pull out
fall
your Switch.
Asleep. It's the only difference. Yeah, right. So it's like, yeah. And so, yeah, on the one hand, I am super excited because, like, Cyberpunk by the people who did The Witcher, like, that's amazing. That sounds fantastic. But, like, you know, this is making me sound old, but like, if I was in college, I'd be so stoked for this move, this game right,
right?
Now.
Yeah.
Cause I would be like, oh, I'm going to skip some classes. I'm not going to go to work. I can't do that.
Yeah.
I don't have class anyway. So I'm like school in summer. No class.
I know. I need to be able to skip some parenting moments. That's what I need to skip. If we could skip parenting, like I skip classes in college,
It'd be awesome.
I'd be a terrible parent is what I would be.
But I do think that it is going to be a phenomenal game. I think it's going to live up to – maybe it won't live up to the hype because the hype has gotten a little out of control. But I think it's going to be a very well-received game. I think people are going to love it. I think, though, it will be like The Witcher. There will be a lot of people who are like, oh, man, it's in that pile of shame now of games I started and didn't finish. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think you're right in that they won't, like, just by sheer force of will and time and effort. I mean, this game has been in development for so long. I can't imagine that studio would be unaware that they were putting out a bad game or a game that didn't live up to at least their own high expectations. So I suspect it'll be a marvel on a number of levels. My worry with myself, and this is just because I've been anticipating it a lot. I'm such a huge fan of the studio. I've now built a PC for that game, like, so excited. I'm a teensy bit worried that the tone of the world is going to turn me off a bit. I'm a little worried that Cyberpunk as a product, as a pre-existing tabletop role-playing series that was created in the 80s, was created as like a horny 14-year-old boy's version of what the future was going to look like.
You leave the fifth element out of this.
Yeah. But that it'll be so true to its source material that it'll feel a little icky playing it. I don't know that that's going to be case. That's my only worry. That's my only worry is that I'll be like, I kind of just don't like being here. And this game is asking me to be here for hundreds of hours. Don't know if I hope I'm wrong. And I kind of expect to be wrong. I expect it's going to be sophisticated and interesting and varied and full of wonderful stories. But that's my only worry. What about you, Christian?
Yeah, I think it will live up to the hype. The only way I think it might not is on last gen consoles. I don't know, but I could see like if anywhere it maybe doesn't, it's like, oh, in this firefight, it went down to 15 frames per second, you know, or something like that, like trying to.
Well, there's that news story that the CD Projekt Red said, I mean, and again, you know, this is the source is inside the company, but they said it's it runs surprisingly well on last gen consoles.
Yes. So, yes. Yes. And I hope it does. I'm saying if there is like a, you know, a hole in the screen where bugs can get in, it would be on those older consoles. I think it will live up to the hype. I think it will. I agree with you that I think it might be more challenging than something like The Witcher. While The Witcher certainly had a lot of political themes in it, and how the Witchers are treated certainly is a common theme in that game and in those books. And everything else that the other, you know, humans do aside from the monsters. It is a world full of political turmoil and treating people poorly. Maybe it's just the way I contextualize it. It's like this high fantasy setting. I'm outside or I'm in this mead hall. It feels different than in a kind of dystopic future that's like, I see, you know, like, oh, I could be here. Ooh, this feels dirty. I don't know if it will get me down or not. Like, I feel like I have been so locked down over these last 8 months that initially I felt that way. Like, I had a hard time. I really loved the DLC to the big expansion to The Division 2. And I think I got that. I think it came out like March 3rd and we locked down March 10th. And I was like, I can't play this game anymore. Got a virus gone rampant as I shoot people and people are awful to each other. But I've been here for so long now that I'm okay with brutal escapism again, I think.
Interesting.
And yeah. I think that's saying a lot about me more than anything else, but yeah. There was a period where I couldn't enjoy media. I would just, what would I do when I was done with work and parenting? Look at a clock. I just couldn't do. And I've found a way to enjoy things again. And I think for me, the balance that I'll need to find is how I'm curious to see how it balances the, what I anticipate to be the heavier RPG elements with, and maybe this goes into how it could not live up to some people's expectations. The trailers they've shown so far are pretty bombastic. And I could see people being like, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to go in there and shoot this, and I'm going to do this, and I'll take this person and slash their face, and I'm going to do this. And then you really play it, and it's like, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to read this dialogue tree for 10 minutes. I'm going to customize this. I haven't moved in and out, you know. So I'm curious how they balance it. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it's gonna be exciting. I'm pretty excited about it myself. We will be talking about it, I guess, you know, basically for the rest of the year and probably beyond that, or maybe for the next 7 years if CD Projekt Red has their way. My story of the week is one we've talked about a little bit before, but now it's official. Super Nintendo World theme park is opening in Japan in February 4th, 2021. It seems weird to even talk about a theme park as COVID is spiking again here in the United States. But other parts of the world, it turns out, not as dumb as us about some things. And maybe these vaccines will actually pull us out from this catastrophe that we're living in. Either way, it sounds like the Super Nintendo World theme park will officially open its doors on February 4th, 2021. They have released official photos and some video showing off some of the interiors. We saw those spy photos and we speculated on those several weeks ago when people were circulating, you know, aerial like drone photos of the theme park being finished. But these are official photos of Bowser's Castle, which has like this giant statue of Bowser inside it. And some of the rides, the Mario Kart ride. Originally, by the way, this was supposed to debut alongside the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, which did not happen, of course, because of COVID. And also originally, there were going to be satellite versions of this. This one, of course, in Japan, in Tokyo, but that at Universal Studios, Japan, I guess. There were going to be ones in Orlando, in Hollywood, and in Singapore. But now we don't know if any of those are going to be actually completed. The one in Orlando, they halted production indefinitely because of the pandemic. So we don't know if that will be completed at all or scrapped. But Japan is opening its doors February 4th, 2021. Brian, did you get a chance to see some of these pictures?
Yeah, it looks amazing. It also feels a little bit like a monkey's paw wish where you're like, you're like, I want a Super Nintendo World theme park. And they're like, sure, but it'll be during a pandemic.
Yeah. Do I also get Frogurt?
Yeah. It's no good. It looks amazing. And like, you know, if you've ever been to any of the things that they've done it's Universal, right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. So like the Harry Potter stuff is unbelievable if you've been to that. So man, I would love to see this in Orlando or Hollywood. Not that I, you know, wouldn't want to take the trip to Japan. It's just a little easier if it's a little closer. But I'm really looking forward to one day first leaving my house, but also then going to a theme park and enjoying something like this because it looks amazing.
Yeah, it's almost a weird thing to even look at images of a theme park today. And I go, oh, just the idea of going to a place like that, it seems fantastical 8 months into lockdown. But Christian, we talked about this before when we saw the spy photos, but these are official shots. And oh my, does it look really, really cool. What do you think?
Yeah, I was just excited to finally see Mario and Bowser and Mario Kart in HD with these pictures, you know, for the first. I'm kidding.
Zing.
I mean,
take that, Nintendo.
They honestly, of course, they look better than the spy shots, but these real pictures look better than the renders. Like, it looks so, like, there were renders of, you know, what the theme park's going to look like that kind of leaked out too. They look so good. That Mario Kart ride sounds incredible. It all looks great. I mean, yes, it is 100% as Brian said. It's the monkey paw's wish. Like, you get it at the time when, and now I finally have time to read all these books.
Step on the glasses. Yeah,
it looks incredible. I hope it does well. I hope people are safe, and I hope that it. Most importantly and selfishly for me, I hope it comes to Los Angeles.
Yeah, I know. I'd love to go visit the Japan site at some point, but it just seems like. I mean, as difficult as it is to imagine going to a theme park now, it's even more difficult to imagine getting on an airplane and flying to Japan. It's just, it just seems like a impossible wish, but hopefully at some point I would love to experience it first person, you know?
Yeah.
I think it looks really cool.
And I think the thing that's so amazing about those, like the Harry Potter and what's the other thing that they have at Universal that's so...
They have Simpsons World out here too.
Do they have Simpsons where I haven't seen that one. The one in Orlando has the Avatar.
Right. Yes. I would love to visit that.
Man. So, I mean, the rides are cool. They're amazing. Absolutely amazing. But just as amazing is just how meticulously detailed the settings are. Like, you don't have to go on the rides. You just wander around and it's just, it's just crazy how real everything looks and, you know, being dropped into those places. And I can imagine just how crazy it would feel being dropped into, you know, Super Mario World. That's just crazy.
Yeah. Our friend, Trisha Hershberger tweeted something that I thought was clever. She said, are all the concession stands just selling mushroom based food? It's like, oh, that's a little disgusting, but you know, they can maybe pull it off. Anyway, February 4th, 2021, it's going to be here before you know it. I'm sure we'll get lots of YouTube videos of people who are, either recounting or showing directly the experience of being there. So I'm kind of excited to even experience it a bit vicariously. All right, let's move on and talk about the games that we have been playing. But first, I want to thank our first sponsor, which is Squarespace. Oh my goodness, you've heard me talk about Squarespace for over a decade because I've been using it for over a decade. Personally, my website, jeffcanada.com, built on Squarespace. I recommend Squarespace to all my friends and family whenever they need a website because it's the easiest way to do anything on the web, to turn your cool idea into a new website, to showcase your work, to blog or publish content, even to sell things. It's so simple to build an online storefront with Squarespace. It's all just drag and drop. What you see is what you get. You start with one of their incredible templates that are made by their world-class designers, And then you just start making it your own. You start moving stuff around. It's so simple. You don't need to know HTML. You don't need to pay someone a large fee to build your website for you. You can do it yourself. And you can make it look really great. You can make it look completely unique. It doesn't have to look anything like their templates by the time you're done, but it will look awesome. And you, like I said, you can drop in e-commerce functionality. It's so simple to make it all work the way you want it to work. Everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. You don't have to worry about that. You never have to upgrade or patch anything. That all happens in the background. They have free and secure hosting. And if you run into any problems, 24/7 award-winning customer support there to help out. Make it yourself. You don't have to rely on anybody else. You can do it yourself with Squarespace. Head over to squarespace.com/Jeff Sent Me. And then you can get a free trial. You don't even have to give them your credit card. They're not going to automatically charge you at any point. You can use your, use their tools, build your website. And then when you're done, you're ready to launch your website, use our promo code JeffSentMe, JeffSentMe, all one word. Save yourself 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. So that's squarespace.com/JeffSentMe and the promo code JeffSentMe for 10% off. All right, it is time to talk about the games that we have been playing. And Brian, I know you have been busy with Lego stuff, but I'm curious what you've been playing lately.
So in my free time, I love to collect handheld gaming systems. And just recently, I started trying to find, like, what was the one game to play on each handheld system. And so I picked up, this isn't probably the one game, it's close though. I picked up Legend of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse for the Game Gear. I've been playing through that. Man, those games, those old Disney games, I mean, the new Disney games are good too, but those old Disney games for like the Game Boy and the Game Gear, they are so much fun. I'm having so much fun playing through this.
So I want to dig into this a bit. First of all, what is it about handheld systems that makes you want to focus on them for collecting?
I think it's just like ever since I was a little kid, just the notion that you could take a system with you wherever you went and play games on the go has always sort of fascinated me. I just love like little technical, you know, gadgets. I've always loved that kind of stuff. And so I started doing game journalism for a while, I had things, some odd handhelds, like I have both Engages and I have the Tapwave and the Gizmondo. And, you know, I had, of course, from my childhood, I have things like the Game Boy and stuff like that. But then I started like looking around and before I knew it, you know, I don't know how many I have. I probably have like 70 handhelds.
Wow.
I have a lot.
You collect like the old Game & Watch stuff too?
No, I have a game and actually I have two Game and Watches. I also have a Russian knockoff, which I think is even better. It's by Electronica.
Wow.
And it's a Mickey Mouse, though I like to pretend that it's Mikkel Mouse. It's
not. You want to play Mikkel Mouse?
You will enjoy the
machine.
they're just so much fun. And like going back, it is, some systems like, you know, you look at some of the Game Boy games. There's some fantastic Game Boy games, but there's a lot of them that are like, you know, they don't really hold up today. But I'm telling you, man, these I don't know if you ever played like Chip and Dale or DuckTales or any of those.
Oh, yeah. Handheld.
Those games are so good and they still are so good. And like so playing Legend of Illusion through with my Game Gear, I was just blown away by how much fun I was having playing this game. And it's like,
oh, dude, the Game Gear in particular, because of the color and the sprites in DuckTales and stuff. When I was a kid, I just thought, or I guess I wasn't even a kid. I was just younger, but I thought it was magic. It just felt like, oh my God, I'm actually playing something that looks like the cartoon. That seems impossible. And I'm carrying it around. Yeah. So I understand the fascination with it. It's cool.
It's funny. What is funny though also is to in any way think of these systems as like, I mean, people today are like, oh, you know, this iPhone, if I put it in my pocket, it kind of sticks out a little bit. So it's like the Game Gear, Like, you could put straps on that thing and wear it like a backpack. It's yeah. huge.
And the screen was like a postage stamp.
Right. And it takes like, I can't remember if it's 6 or 8 AA batteries, which is like.
Oh, man.
And then like the Lynx, the Atari Lynx, same amount of batteries, but you only get 5 hours. 5 hours of playtime. Wow. That's crazy. It just
eats batteries for lunch. That's yes. hilarious. That's really cool. So now you said you referenced this idea of there being like the one game for each system.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, okay. So because I don't have endless quantities of cash, I can't, if I get, say, the Atari Lynx, I just got an Atari Lynx, I can't go out and buy all the Atari Lynx games. And the reality is it costs a lot of money to get these systems. So I'm probably only mm-hmm. going to get one. And so that's what got me thinking. I was like, well, what game should I get? And then I was like, oh, that's actually like an interesting question. What is, if you had to make a list of all the retro handhelds and only could have one game for each of them, what game would you pick? I actually tweeted about this over the weekend and I got some really interesting answers. I think everybody agreed, even though I think no one was happy with it, everybody agreed that Tetris is the game for Game Boy.
Yeah. Because I was going like, to say that.
You have yeah. to say Tetris, right?
It defines that system. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But it's like there are games that are probably better than Tetris on the Game Boy, oh, sure. but like it's Tetris.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's cool. Are there any other surprises that or even ones that you believe for a specific system is the game, even if the public at large might not agree?
The unwashed masses.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of some of the ones that I really, there are like so many out there that I was playing and I cannot remember off the top of my head if there are any that like really stand out. I mean, Tetris, like I said, is a little contentious because people, you know, there are yeah. better games out there for it.
Right.
The PSP is interesting. I think a lot of people were choosing sort of Metal Gear games.
Oh, interesting. I guess that makes sense.
Because it's like, it's, you know, it's what you think of. What I do find fascinating is that I think the more you kind of move forward in time and the more modern the system is, the like harder it is to make that decision. Because suddenly it's like with the Switch, like, is that even possible? Like, can you pick?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's not, a game.
All of a sudden it's a major main console, but yeah. I would have a hard time doing it even with the DS because the DS had such an incredible library.
Yeah.
But for me, the PSP, like immediately Patapon jumps to mind. I don't
Patapon,
know.
Yeah. What was that? I've forgotten their puzzle game. They had that that was so popular. Lumines?
Oh, yeah. Lumines. Yeah. Yeah.
Lumines, yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, Christian, this is right down your alley. I mean, Christian is our resident retro nut. and I know Christian, didn't you order like the crazy what's that company that does the handheld stuff?
Analog Pocket. Yes, I'm very very excited.
I missed out on that pre-order. I'm so annoyed.
I'm looking at this now, Ryan, because I did not know that this Legend of Illusion, sorry, Mickey Mouse came out on Game Gear. So I'm playing catch up a little bit. It came out in 95 per my internet researching. 95 was a wild year for video games. Where you're getting that. Super Star Wars Return of the Jedi also came out for Game Gear. Virtua Fighter 2 was also out, as was Wipeout, Panzer Dragoon, Chrono Trigger.
Like Chrono Trigger was on the Game Gear?
No, the consoles that were still, air quote, alive in 95 is what? There's a PlayStation, the Saturn, the SNES, right. Genesis, 3DO, Jaguar, Neo Geo, CDI, Sega CD, 32X, Game Boy, I mean, Game Boy, Game Gear, Virtual Boy. We're all like,
wait, Virtual Boy?
Still around a little bit.
Virtual Boy, I think one could argue, was never around.
But it's just, what a weird, because I was like, yeah, because I remember the Game Gear earlier. I remember it closer to like, I think 1990 when it came out.
Yeah.
But seeing it that it had this, I guess it, looking now, it went away in 97, so to speak. But there's this, we talk about a console generation now that we're in. Transitions, these games, these bridge games. And it's like, there were three generations going at the same time. It's really cool.
Yeah.
I love old handhelds too. The things like the modding scene people are doing with old GBAs and putting nicer screens in them. It is just, totally.
works of art.
Yeah, I mean, there's just something so cool about these systems. And like, it's funny, today I was on Twitter asking people. So I got a little obsessed about this because my memory, I think, is, you know, a lot of fond memories. You forget the things that you're not so fond of. And I'd sort of forgotten. I mean, I knew, but I'd sort of forgotten how many games didn't have any way to save.
Right. Yeah. Games.
So like the Game Boy relied on the cartridge. It had to have a battery in it. Not all carts did. And that was true also for the Game Gear. And like some of these games, like, I mean, granted, they're not like 100-hour games, but they're also not, you know, arcade games. So like Legend of Illusion, which is Land of Illusion was, I think, the better of the two Mickey Mouse titles. There's no way to save that game. And so I was playing it and I played, you know where this is headed. I played it for like an hour and I killed off like three bosses and I was like, all right, I'm done now. And I turned it off and immediately I was like, ah,
what did I do? Oh man. It's so brutal on a handheld system. You just got done talking about the battery requirements and all these things. Like it's just fraught with potential disasters, you know?
It's like, and it's funny because like, I was like thinking about it and I got convinced. I was like, I must be remembering it wrong. There must have been a way to save games. Like surely. And it's like, no. And so like I went on Twitter and I was like, what was the first portable that allowed you to save a game that wasn't on the cart? That was, you could save it on the system. And I think it was actually the DS, which is crazy. It seems like it should have come before then.
Yeah. Yeah, that is wild. Man, what a cool thing. What a very cool thing to be obsessed with, into. It's awesome. Very, very cool. Christian Spicer, what is on your playlist?
We have a pretty similar playlist.
Yes, we do.
Jeff, so I don't know if you want to...
Sans the WoW expansion, which you're not doing. But yeah, everything else, pretty much.
And sans the odd ways, or not odd, the atypical ways I've been playing my games.
Yes.
Is the thing. Maybe, do you want to start with WoW, and then we can get into Ubisoft land? Or do you want
to... Believe me, I talked a lot about WoW last week. Let's talk about Immortals Fenyx Rising, because that's kind of the new release this week.
Sure. So I am playing on PC via Ubisoft Plus, which is Ubisoft's subscription service.
Same. I
subscribed too many a times and I'm really good about canceling my subscription. It's a great deal if you're interested in these games. It's I think $15 a month on PC, and right now also offers beta access on Amazon Luna, which is their cloud platform, and I think coming soon to Stadia. Per Ubisoft, it says it's coming soon to Stadia as well. And so I'm playing on PC, and then I'm also playing on Luna and on GeForce Now and on my new iPhone controller that I can talk about in a bit. The game itself, it's hard not to talk about in comparison to Valhalla, but for my money, or even more important, I think for my time, I love Immortals Fenyx Rising. Like that, I've played more Valhalla so far because I've had it longer. Maybe like 8 hours of Valhalla and maybe like 4 hours of Immortals so far. But that's the world I want to live in. I find it bright, vibrant. Not all of the jokes land, but I like the tone that it sets up. I like the...
It's a lot more comedy than I thought. Like the pre-release sort of PR push for the game did not really highlight how comedic a take this entire game is.
Yeah.
It's really is a comedy game. If you know, I would put it in the comedy genre. The whole thing is narrated by Zeus and Poseidon, and they're
oh my gosh. Chained to a boulder, bird picking out his liver.
Oh, it's not Poseidon.
No.
It does start with a P. That's why I said Poseidon.
God. Why is this gone to me right now?
I am not going to look it up either. I refuse.
It does start with a P.
He gave fire to humans, which is why Zeus locked him to the boulder.
Yeah. Well, my gosh. This is going to be a 4-hour episode because we're all too lazy to look it up.
Oh my gosh. It is on the tip of my tongue.
I'm going to look it up. I cannot.
This is good. This is good podcasting, though. This is like A-plus podcasting. Anyway, these guys are doing like a comedy routine. It's like you know, straight man, comedic guy. It's really a humorous take, and they're narrating the whole thing. I don't know of a, I can't think of a big sprawling AAA game that has like narration throughout. It's such a cool idea. I don't know why nobody's done this before.
The closest to it, I think, is Call of Juarez Gunslinger, where you have Prometheus.
Yes,
Prometheus.
Thank you, reached that far. That is it. It is Prometheus. Golly, right now, like everyone I had in high school and college is just like not listening to this show. But if they were, they'd be very upset. Legend of Call of Juarez had like, it was narrating and things would change as they happened. Like I walked into the bar and there were 100 men staring me down. There are only two. Oh yeah. And like wipes and there's two, but yeah, you're telling the story and things do change as, Zeus and Prometheus, like it was a huge enemy. He wasn't that big and it like shrinks back down. It's really fun.
But the jokes are sophisticated, right? It's not, I mean, you say it like that and that seems a little goofball-y. And I guess it is a little goofball-y, but there's also pretty good writing. It's pretty good writing. The gags, I mean, there's some extreme gags. There's like a, I don't want to even spoil it. At the beginning, there's kind of a big joke, you know, the meta joke on video games that's kind of fun. And they're, you know, they're doing really kind of inside mythology jokes about, you know, about Aphrodite and you kind of have to understand some of that history to even get some of the jokes. There's some good
or not remember stuff. Prometheus's name and still get the jokes too.
Yeah, so, you know. Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's hit and miss. It's not, I don't think it's the funniest thing I've ever played.
No,
but it also doesn't. Again, I'm like 4 to 5 hours in. I don't think it overstays its welcome. Like its narrative is comedic. That is the tone, but like. The action, I really enjoy the third-person combat. It is
the combat's great.
It's fast. Great. It's fluid. You unlock what's essentially like a whip to pull you closer to people. To like it's like a Spider-Man move, basically. So you can start having aerial combos. The upgrades are fun. It's like the world is beautiful. Yes, it looks similar to Breath of the Wild, but I think 5-10 years from now, this game. And try not to compare it too much, but will withstand the test of time better than Valhalla, because like this type of graphic style will look great. Whereas like Valhalla will be like, this isn't a real person anymore. This looks silly.
Right. Right. It's abstracted a bit. It's stylized to the point because it's got that cartoony aesthetic that it'll kind of like how WoW is really. WoW kind of holds up for me because they chose Lo those many years ago to be a cartoon aesthetic. It feels still all right in the modern context. It's not trying to be photorealistic. And that's the same
in
thing
Fortnite
here.
With like Kratos. Yeah. Kratos looks great in Fortnite. Everything looks great in Fortnite. Like,
right.
Yeah. It's really smart design. I really like it.
I agree with you, man. I am very surprised by this game. I was excited about it because I heard it was the Odyssey team that did it. And I'm such a fan of Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And you can tell that there's a lot of holdover from, you know, their work in the Greek mythology, you know, it's still that in that same wheelhouse, but the game really has its own identity and you do some of the same things you do in Breath of the Wild. You do some of the same things you do in Assassin's Creed, but I don't think it's an exact lift of either of those games. It is kind of carving out its own little unique corner of something. And it's really pleasurable. It is a very fun world to be in. Bright, vibrant, colorful. A true open world in the sense that the game doesn't even really hold your hand. Nothing is gated. That's where it's like Breath of the Wild, where, you know, Breath of the Wild is only gated by like what you can get to right now, what you can actually reach. Like if you could get enough stamina to get to the top of that thing, you could get to that top of that thing right now, you know? And it's just about getting enough stamina to get there. It's not, you have to get to a certain level or whatever. There's no levels in this game. Everything, there's lots of ways to level up your character, but they're all about, you know, solving stuff, beating bad guys, collecting, opening chests, collecting resources in the world, and then going and upgrading specific skills or your health or your stamina. to be able to climb longer or go faster, farther, glide. You get wings very early. You get Icarus-like wings very early, and you're able to soar through the world. And the draw distance is wild, and you can like leap off of tall things and soar for great distances. And the game world is big, it's just vast, with tons of little interesting things to do. And it's constantly giving you quests, but the quests aren't like to get XP, because there's no XP. You're doing things that give you specific rewards, weapons, armor, resources. Then the resources can be used to purchase upgrades. And you know, it's got this job board where you can, it's got daily quests and weekly quests, and then quests in the game world as well. You can get mounts in this game. You can collect all these different, tame all these different animals in the world and ride them around. And you've got this cool, like, golden lasso of a harness that lets you ride the animals. There's so many fun little flourishes that make the game have so much personality. I think that's the word that I kept thinking about when I was playing Immortals Fenyx Rising, is it's got personality. Mm-hmm. You know, you have this sort of buddy relationship, at least in the early part of the game, with Hermes, who's this trickster god, and he's constantly showing up at places and messing things up. And you get a phoenix that flies around with you that does cool stuff. You can upgrade the phoenix in cool ways. It's really cool. I'm so impressed with this game.
And I like the puzzles, you know, similar yes. to the shrines in Zelda. And it's tough because it is similar to that, but to me, this is not a Breath of the Wild like, yes, inspired by, but I think it does do enough things on its own. And it also takes things from other open world games that it is clearly inspired by Breath of the Wild, but it's not just trying to do that. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I really like the puzzles. I've heard that some of the later ones can, you know, maybe be a little more difficult than they otherwise need to be. But so far, I've really enjoyed them. They're clever. They're fun. They're a nice, you know, change of pace. I really think that there's a chance that this game could be looked back upon, you know, even just a couple of years, as like a real sleeper hit that maybe people didn't give enough attention to. And hopefully people, I mean, it came out at a tough time, right after Valhalla, right before Cyberpunk. But it does a lot right. And again, for me, between Watch Dogs, Assassin's Creed, and Immortals Fenyx Rising, Immortals Fenyx Rising is the one that I want to spend my time in.
Yeah, I mean, I still think I'm still enjoying Assassin's Creed a lot, and we'll talk about that shortly. But I think this game, I hope it doesn't become a victim of its release date, because it deserves, I think, more attention than it may get just by virtue of what you said of when it comes out. And mm-hmm. I hope that people don't overlook it. We got an email from a listener. I'm trying to find it. I can't quite find it. So I'm not going to be able to credit the emailer. I apologize, but you know who you are, and I appreciate you for writing in, who suggested we were kind of lamenting this idea that Ubisoft is releasing all of their stuff in like a month period, you know, almost cannibalizing their own library here with, you know, big open world games that are kind of delivering this similar feeling between Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed and this game. All happening right, boom, 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 instead of spreading them out over the course of the year. And this emailer was suggesting perhaps that is actually a strategy to get the Ubisoft Connect service to be the way people experience these games. The idea being that, hey, if you've got this big concentration of releases coming out with Far Cry, you know, soon on its heels, that people are more likely to do what you and I did, which is sign up for the monthly service instead of trying to pick one of the games to play. Oh, I can play all of the games by signing up for the service, and then they've got you in that ecosystem. So maybe that was a conscious play on their part and not, you know, sort of cannibalizing their own library.
Yeah, I don't know if they advertised it that well then.
Right.
But I think if you want to play these games, the value is certainly there. I think right now it's only on PC and then streaming services for Ubisoft Plus, I believe. But yes, the value is certainly there. And to talk a little bit about, so I'm in the Amazon Luna beta now because I have a problem. And I don't know how much time we need to spend here, but Brian, I am curious to get your thoughts on it. Like, for me, well, let me back up a little bit. One minor problem. As I'm playing this, I've played some on GeForce Now on my Backbone One, which I'll talk about in a little bit, in bed. And then when I got my Luna controller, I played on my iPad with my Luna controller. I played on my PC on Luna just to kind of test it out. And I was having a lot of fun, really loved it. And then I went back to play on PC because, in my opinion, it's not as playing via Luna, much like Stadia often is the case. It's not as good as playing on a high-end PC directly. I love streaming. It's very competent. I can play the entire game streaming. But as I'm stuck in my house, sitting at my desk, like, oh, I will play on my expensive high-end PC. Problem, and maybe this is like Miles Morales and it will change mid-episode. The Luna version of Immortals Fenyx Rising is, I believe, 1.0.3. The PC version is 1.0.2, which means that after I played it on Luna, I cannot now play it on PC until PC gets patched. Super frustrating of the cloud future, because Ubisoft, I think they're huge. Like we talked about before, I think people should give NVIDIA more credit for like pushing the industry forward with ray tracing and even the Shield projects that they've released and GeForce Now and some of that stuff that they're doing. Ubisoft is really on the forefront. Like, their games are everywhere. Ubisoft Connect now has cloud syncing saves across whatever platform changed, you play.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Because I, honestly, this is on me for not knowing this ahead of time, but I didn't know it ahead of time. And I have been playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla on my brand new Xbox Series X because that was the game that I was going to play on Series X. And I was all excited. And I was playing, blah, 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 blah. And then I wanted to play Fenyx Rising, decided to get the Ubisoft Plus subscription, and was like, hey, well, I'll check out to see how Assassin's Creed Valhalla looks on my PC with ultra wide, and maybe I'll love it on that, but oh, it'd be such a pain to restart. I'm like 30 hours into that game. Blew my mind that I could pick up my save right where I left off on PC. Yes. Having left off on Xbox Series X, I was gobsmacked by that. And it was like, this should be how it is. This should just be how it is. Unfortunately, that only exists if you have the $15 a month subscription fee. But it's a pretty great perk.
I don't think so. I think Ubisoft Connect, you just have to be in. You have to have like your Ubisoft account.
I could be wrong about that, but my understanding was that the cloud saving synchronicity thing is a perk of the subscription to Plus. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
I don't think
it is. But it's coming. It's like a lot of people are, you know, Unreal Engine has that, I think, built into it, or it's coming to it.
And, yeah, for five. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, it's going to be in the not too distant future. That's going to be the norm. And it's such a big deal.
Such a big deal.
Yeah. It's like, you know, all this other stuff's great. Like being able to have save states where you could switch between games real quickly and all this. But really, for the entitled people like us, you know, I want to play on my newfangled console in my living room. Now I want to play on my super expensive PC. Like, sounds like a, I mean, I do the same thing though, but it's like, you know, I feel the same way where I'm like, but I don't want to replay the thing. Being able to just move around between systems, like getting rid of those barriers is like, I think a sort of a wider point is like, that's the thing. That's what I think. There's obviously a lot of things happening right now in technology, but one of the big things that the game industry seems to be working on for this generation, this that we just entered, is removing barriers. Like, you know, so you don't have to worry about if your friend is playing on the same platform as you, maybe, or, you know, if you started the game on a TV and you want to finish it on a mobile phone, you know, on a subway ride, which may happen in the next year. When we can all go back out again. But like getting rid of those barriers is such like that's been the impediment for me. And I think for a lot of people to sometimes play games because it's like, you know, anything that's going to slow down your experience, there's always a chance that you're just like, you know what, I'll just do something else or I'll play a different game.
Yeah, I do believe that that's going to start feeling
so obvious and we're going to be so comfortable with it that it's going to be one of those things where like, do you remember when you wouldn't be able to continue your game on it? It'll feel so weird and foreign that it ever happened at all.
It will be the conversation we had at the beginning of this episode with Brian on Game Gear and no saves.
Right. Oh, yeah, perfect. Exactly. Exactly. Well,
no, it's funny because like, I always find this, and I think it's a bit of a bummer. I think it's a bit of just a slight tinge of game culture. When I asked that question, there were a lot of people I was asking specifically about the Game Boy on Twitter. And there were some people who kind of like took offense, like, well, of course they didn't have it. You know, and I was like, I'm not trying to smack talk the Game Boy. I'm just, right. I'm just trying to get to the, because in theory, they could have done that. They could have designed it. But
right.
I bet there were a lot of people who were like, well, it's probably the cost or this or that. And I was like, I really, deep down, I think it was something that they just never thought of doing. Like, why would you? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Isn't that just not the kind of thing that people expected?
Yeah. And like, that's, to me, that's fascinating. And like, at what point did that change? Whereas we're talking about now, there will be a time, absolutely, where people are like, gosh, I can't imagine that I had to like get all my friends together and make sure we were all going to buy the same console or we wouldn't be able to play games together.
Yeah.
Like, that seems insane. Like, even now that seems slightly insane, but like, right. But like, yeah. So I'm super interested in those moments where suddenly it goes from being an interesting idea that maybe you could do to being something that they're using to sell a console or system to like, well, of course you have to have it or no one's going to buy your system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think we're on the cusp of that with all this stuff for sure.
To confirm the Ubisoft thing, you just need a Ubisoft account. You do not need to subscribe because it's like between Switch and PlayStation where the subscription isn't even available. It's phenomenal. And Destiny has this. I think, Brian, you mentioned how Unreal Engine 5 is going to build it in. Fortnite has it. Other games certainly have it. But I think Ubisoft is really doing great things out there, being on every platform, putting their games places, still making Wii games, or whatever it was for Just Dance. And Immortals Fenyx Rising, I've heard good things about the Switch version. I have enjoyed playing it on streaming, which is the only way I can currently play it right now, as my PC version is locked behind a prior game update. And so, Brian, this is what I wanted. We got sidetracked. This is what I kind of wanted to ask you about your opinion as you're playing Game Gear versions of games and handheld versions of games. Like, to me, not to hide my hand, I think I said it already. Yeah. The Luna version of Immortals Fenyx Rising is not as good as me playing on my 3080 PC.
Right.
It's not as good.
Yeah.
But it is totally fine.
Yeah.
Like, and if I never get my save back onto the PC version for whatever reason, I will finish Immortals Fenyx Rising on Luna. And I think in terms of breaking down barriers, like, we used to get emails, Jeff, of like, hey, I want to get back into gaming. I played a lot in college and I don't know if I have time. Now I would say, hey, Brian, join Luna and pay $14 a month for Ubisoft Plus. Go play. Then cancel it after a month. Like, do you think, like, when you're recommending games, is that an option? Like, yeah, it's not the Cyberpunk on Stadia. I'm speculating. I don't know. Cyberpunk on Stadia might not be the best version of the game, but that's the version you should play if you have internet for like most people. How dumb am I?
No, I mean, it's funny because like this is what I always think of. I remember before – this is going to be a journey. I'm sorry. This answer. I remember before the iPhone came out, right before the iPhone came out, when I would go on long trips, I would take with me a iPod. I would take some sort of gaming system. I take a camera. I take books. Now I just take my iPhone. Right. And I do that. I don't do that because the iPhone has a better camera or it's a better reading experience or it's the best way to listen to music. I do it because it's really easy to do. And it all goes into my pocket. I don't have to screw around with anything. It just works. And I think that people are not all people, but I think a lot of people are willing to overlook like quality to some degree if ease of use is really ratcheted up.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what I think we're going to see with streaming. There will definitely be, and I'm the same way. Like it's so funny because like I've got this high-end system, and yet I will sometimes play on Stadia or Luna. And the main reason, honestly, is because it's like, I don't want to install the game. You know, I want to check this game out. I don't want to spend 15, 20 minutes installing it to find out I don't really like it and screw it. It's like, I'll just launch it on Luna, which takes no time. And I personally think that's one of the biggest things. Like, you just press, you go to the site, you press play, you're playing the game. There's no
screen. Like, Luna apologizes that Ubisoft games take a minute or two to load because it goes through Ubisoft Connect. It's like, hey, right. Sorry, we know this is taking forever. And I'm like, it's been 20 seconds. We're good.
Yeah, right. And like, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I know it's not going to be as good as running it locally on my computer, but I want to just try it. I just want to check it out. I want to see what it's like. I'm not at this point now, but when my son's 19 now, but when he was young and like, I would get these little snapshots of moments where it was like, okay, I've got like 10 minutes to play games. And there were so many times where I would be like, all right, I'm going to quickly dive in and just like try to polish off this mission. And it's like, oh, an update.
And you're like, right. Oh, yeah. The worst.
All of my play time.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, I think that, you know, I think it's great that you can do that. And I think that a lot of people are going to find that appealing.
That may be one of those things that we were just talking about. That may be one of those things of, hey, do you remember when you'd actually have to install a thing on your, because I mean, what we're describing is the same thing as having a Blu-ray versus watching it on Netflix, right? Yeah. It does it look better on Blu-ray? Absolutely, it looks better on Blu-ray. Do most people care? Most people don't care. Most people are much happier clicking the button and having it instantly start playing on their television than futzing with a disc or, you know, figuring out how to do all that. And the convenience is so much better than the minor quality improvement. And I think video games are going to get there really soon. I do. I don't think it's going to be that far off. Will I be playing Cyberpunk on anything other than my 3080? Heck no. Right. I want every pixel rendered, you know? But I can definitely see myself, as the technology improves and things get better and better, as Netflix did and all streaming services did, they all didn't start looking as good or happening as quickly or not having buffering as frequently or whatever. But as that technology improves for video games, I can definitely see the convenience winning out. And I think it might end up being one of those things where we're all like, do you remember when? Yeah. On that stuff too.
Yeah, I think it's a push-pull on infrastructure and data caps, which were, oh, I think
yeah.
folks data. On the East now have seen caps come back in and it's a mess. But data that's going to be the struggle.
I think data caps have the potential to completely just take this whole thing and just push it right off the side of a cliff. Like, if those really come in and they stick around, nobody's going to be streaming because it's just,
I think there's the opposite will happen. To let that happen. You know, there's too much money to be made for people to push lots of data at you for the other people asking for your money from data caps. Yeah. I just don't think that that'll happen.
I think it will come with like the horrible dark side to Starlink that we don't know about yet of like all those micro, but like something will happen to disrupt or, you know, who's you what or do whatever, where it's like, okay, greedy dinosaur company, you went for this thing. Well, guess what? You don't exist anymore. And now here's how we do it. You know, right, like yeah. Welcome to 7G. And it's like, what happened to 6G?
I'm no saying it's over, man. Yeah. My brother lives in Atlanta and he was telling me, I didn't know this. He said he's been on data cap for like years and he just pays an extra $50 a month for unlimited. And I'm thinking just.
Yeah, like, I know. Geez.
It's like
an extra $50 a month.
It's like you get what I have, but you pay $50 more is what you're telling me.
Ugh, that's rough. That's brutal.
Yeah.
But hey,
loop it back. Immortals is great. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, no, before I do want to keep talking about that. I do owe an ad here. So let me jump in and just thank our next sponsor, which is HelloFresh. Oh my goodness. I love HelloFresh. We just cooked a HelloFresh tonight. I cooked a HelloFresh. It was pork burgers. They were incredible. My wife, dude, it's so funny. I'm thinking about this right now. I did not plan this for the ad, but it just occurred to me tonight. My wife sitting at the table said to me, unscripted, unprompted, she turned to me and she goes, these burgers are better than something that you would get at a high-end restaurant, which is seems like it was a setup for this ad for HelloFresh, but it was HelloFresh recipe I cooked for my family, and everybody loved it. Even the kids were eating it, and I can't get my kids to eat anything other than plain noodles. So there you go. End of ad. Get HelloFresh. What is it, though? Oh, HelloFresh is a delivery service for pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes. It's delivered right to your door, and it's actually America's number one meal kit. You don't have to worry about buying too much of an ingredient because it's pre-measured. You don't have to worry about planning your meals because they're right there. You have this huge assortment. Such variety has been entered into our menu at this point in my life because of HelloFresh. Yes, would I have made burgers? Maybe. Would I have had burgers? But these were pork burgers. They had onions in them. It was amazing. They had caramelized onions that I caramelized myself with barbecue sauce. It was so delicious. These were like gourmet pork burgers. Loved them. But, you know, we get all kinds of crazy stuff that I would never get. I would never probably make, you know, shrimp risotto. I had shrimp risotto a couple of weeks ago from HelloFresh. Incredible. I'm telling you, it was amazing. You do not understand how much this has affected my life. It is a huge improvement. And it can be a huge improvement in your life. You have sustainability. HelloFresh is the first global carbon neutral meal kit company. Pretty amazing. You reduce your food waste by at least 25% by skipping the grocery store and using HelloFresh. That's pretty wonderful. So you feel good about yourself. You got the flexibility of your lifestyle to be able to, you know, you can stop and start the meals whenever you need. I love getting on the app every week and selecting our meals and getting excited a few weeks out, you know, what's going to happen in a few weeks, what the meals are going to be. So many meals to choose from. It's great. All kinds of different plans. So if, you know, if you're a vegetarian, they have vegetarian meals, all kinds of great things. And there's great values. You save 40% when you use HelloFresh versus shopping at the grocery store. And you don't end up throwing away excess, which is what I love. I'm telling you, HelloFresh is great. And if you go to HelloFresh.com/DLC90, that's DLC90, and use the promo code DLC90, you get a total of $90 off, including free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/DLC90 and promo code DLC90. Try it. I think you're going to love it. I've learned a new skill. I feel confident as a cook now because of HelloFresh. It's so simple. It's so easy. Adds great variety. Makes me feel good. HelloFresh.com/DLC90 and DLC90 at checkout. All right, Christian, you were saying.
I was just going to put a bow on Immortals Fenyx Rising. I'm very excited to play more. I think I will. I know that Cyberpunk is like breathing down my neck, but I think it will serve as a respite from the oppressive atmosphere that is like, I'm ready to play it, but I am also willing to accept the toll it will take on me. Last of Us Part 2, one of my fave games. I had to put the controller down and walk away. I expect Cyberpunk would be the same. And Immortals is just a joy. Immortals Fenyx Rising. It is just an absolute joy, and I really think I'll see it through. It's fantastic.
I agree. It's one of the biggest surprises of the year for me. Just in how much fun and how much I want to keep playing it. I really want to keep playing it. It's lots of discovery. We talked about the combat being really, really fun. You have basically two kinds of attacks. You can attack the health of the monster, or you can attack their stamina. And if you knock their stamina down, it knocks them for a loop, and you can get a chance to really you know, whack them and do a lot of damage really quickly. And there's like, you know, every time you do a perfect dodge, it slows things down in slow motion. So I'm constantly, and you can parry. It's a really fun, effective, skill-based system. And the puzzles are great. It's got all the ingredients that I really enjoy for games like this. A fun, vibrant, interesting world to discover new things. A much more story than Zelda. I mean, I know that's blasphemy to say, but Breath of the Wild, not exactly a big story for me. Maybe there are others that got more story out of it, but
it's different than Breath of the Wild. Like, this is narrative heavy. Again, I don't think it overstays its welcome. You're allowed to explore, but also you go into first person mode to explore the map. You don't see everything. You have to go through and mark it with like feeling the rumbles. But when you mark it, it's there. Well, Breath of the Wild, it was like you have 10 pins, you know, it they're going to endlessly be compared, but they are very different feeling games in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And none of the weapons break. So right there, boom.
No, but just my saved it on my 1.0.2 file.
That is pretty funny. I think that's probably a Stadia problem more than anything.
No, it's else. Luna. I think Luna has a newer version of the game. Like, it launched a day later on Luna. I was so excited.
Or maybe they needed to update it on Luna because it was broken on Luna for some weird reason.
Maybe. You know? Maybe.
Yeah. But you're also playing a little AC Valhalla. You know that I'm in love with that game, but what is your, how are you? I mean, obviously not as much as Immortals. You've made that clear, but what do you think?
Yeah, Immortals is definitely scratching the itch for me right now. Valhalla is, the environments are big and beautiful, and the land is so appealing to explore. And I really like some of the mechanics they have for raiding. And I do, I think you mentioned this before, I do find it rewarding. And again, I'm 8 hours at most into this game. But I do find it rewarding to like go back and build up my settlement, where typically I'm like, yeah, no, you know, like everybody that lives there can die. I am just, I'm going to finish this quest. Your child is waiting for you. I have no child, you know, like I'm just questing. But I find it rewarding to go back so far. And I really like exploring the world. I like opening the map and maybe not going the direct way that I'm supposed to go to the next thing. And I find that discovery to be really fun. It is bloody and done well, I think. Like some of those finisher animations and, you know, attacks, it is brutal, and it doesn't shy away from the brutality of what you're doing and what's happening in this world. And I find that engaging. It's kind of like, it's far more gory. I think you can turn it off. I haven't, but it's far more gory than Spider-Man Miles Morales. But I love the finishing moves in Miles Morales. They're so awesome and so fun to watch. And the same thing is true in Valhalla. I love them. They're fantastic. It really cinematic and fun to see in these big battles when you go in and just lop somebody.
They even do some, there's some Mortal Kombat type stuff where it like x-rays in and shows the interior organs being torn asunder, you know?
I'm pretty sure there's one where I lopped a dude's head off and then continuing the swing came around and like chopped both of their hands off above his head. And I was like, just brutal. The things that are holding it back for me, why I think I'm not as in love with it as you are, Jeff, are two main things. One, I find the fidelity of the people, the graphical fidelity of the people, and I'm playing on PC, 3080, my GeForce Experience recommended settings. They don't look great. Like, it's not Uncanny Valley-esque, but it's like the main characters during cutscenes look incredible, like the trailers and all that stuff. Like, that's, I see that in game. That's incredible. But when I'm playing, they all kind of have this like dead eye. They're not quite T-posed, but like just it's open world. I don't know. And I'm ready to be past that. And maybe it's because I played Origins and Odyssey also on PC. In my head, I was still hoping Valhalla would be next gen in some weird way. And it doesn't feel that to me. I remember really being blown away by Origins and thinking it looked great. Odyssey, I thought seeing that Greek setting looked great. In Valhalla, I don't know. I think the characters seem, they feel dated to me. And also that like open worldy kind of thing of like, I'm in a room having a conversation with somebody and like the 40 NPCs are all in the background going, watermelon, grapefruit, watermelon, grapefruit. And then like my conversation stops and they like have two more beats of like, habba shabba shabba shabba. I'm like, I don't need that. I don't need that murmur. I don't need awkward soldiers standing around me. They like in Ghost of Tsushima, when I'm in these moments with other people that are integral to the battle, they feel like they're there and they have weight. And in Valhalla, I feel like it's just numbers. Like, look, there's 40 people in this room with you. And I'm like, but they don't need to be just don't be there. You're weird. And then the other thing that, and I texted you about this, that takes me out of the game. And while I find Immortals Fenyx Rising to be very tonally consistent, even with the variety of the things you're able to do in game, I find Valhalla to be tonally inconsistent. In that I'm on this pretty, you know, we're starting my settlement. This is a brutal world I'm living. And then I'm exploring a new town. I'm not going to curse, but I'm going to describe things that have to do with intercourse, dear listeners. And I stumble across this person. This is early in the game, maybe 3 hours in. And this woman's like, you need to help me. I need my rivers to run wet. I haven't gushed in months. I need to be plowed and my seeds must be. And I'm just like, what? And she's like, yeah, you need to. My husband and I, we can't anymore. He's limp as a wet like noodle. And I'm like, what? And she's like, you need to burn down my house while we're in it so that we can make love. And they're in there like, yes, yes, yes. Oh, smash that vase, smash that vase. And I'm like, what? No, my character would, that'd be like if in episode season three, episode two of Breaking Bad, Walt's in a new town and someone's like, hey, I let this fart out of a jar. Will you go find it? And Walt's like, I don't know who you are, but this sounds compelling. I will go. I will find this fart. It just, it seems, again, it feels open worldy. I don't know how else to describe it, but like, I think you can have variety and missions without having, I don't get it. I just, and I've experienced, that's the one that stood out that I texted you as I was in it. Like, what? I don't know, no, man. It pulls me.
I'm not going to defend that particular mission, which I also found to be hackneyed and kind of dumb. But I will defend the idea of having tonally different things in an open world. I kind of like how in Assassin's Creed, especially because it doesn't have that ticking clock problem that a lot of open world games have, where
it's great.
It's like, hey, you know, we got a race to save so-and-so. And it's like, oh, do you want to make some pottery? You know, it's like, no, I feel like I need a race to save so-and-so more than that whole pottery thing. It doesn't really have that with Assassin's Creed Valhalla. There's no, you are, you know, conquering a land and that's going to take some time. So you're building up your resources. You're doing all kinds of stuff. You have time to sit down and play or log the dice game or whatever it is. By the way, I got a very lengthy email about how I was very wrong about Orlog from a listener. Thank you for that.
I'm horrible at it. So
it is. I enjoy playing it. It's interesting, but I found it to be a little simplistic. But they're making like a full tabletop version of it that you can buy in IRL. So I do like the idea that there's some goofball quests and there's the super serious political intrigue quest. Like I want there to be some respite from the constant doer, you know, self-serious stuff. And I think that, you know, there's a clever quest that I did where, you know, a dude is super stinky and his whole family thinks he's stinky and he thinks he is not washing himself and rolling around in the stinkiest stuff to protect himself from the enemy. And you literally have to like shoot a thing out from under him so he falls in the river to wash himself. I don't know. You know, it's not Shakespeare, but it's a fun respite from
Shakespeare from all the would other be stuff. A full on, he poops on him. Like, don't,
yeah, I mean,
Shakespeare's the wrong comparison. Yeah.
Yeah. Shakespeare definitely went for the plowing your wife stuff. But I don't know. I agree that particular quest you mentioned, I also thought was a little lame, but
I think it's how they're
overall. I don't think the game is wrong for being tonally varied.
Yeah. I think it's how it's introed. Like you're exploring this world and then it's like, hey, can you help me with this thing? And you're like, I mean, sure, I'm an adventurer. And then it's like, no, I don't want to. Like, Brian, I'm curious. And I know we've all played our share of open world games, and this is not unique to Valhalla. And maybe I'm expecting more from games now. Do you have a take on this, or do you enjoy that kind of respite? Or
yeah, I mean, the problem I have with Ubisoft games, not all of them, but the open world games, is that I think Ubisoft does too good a job at making them fun sandboxes. So like, I know the last Far Cry game I played, I don't think I even finished the first mission. I was just like immediately like, ooh, what's that over there? And that was the last you ever saw of me. And I played a lot of it, but I didn't do any missions because I was just having fun doing weird stuff. And that led me to other weird stuff. And I think Ubisoft understands that. I also think that you can really, it's fascinating to me. If you play all their games, you can really see where they borrow elements from, you know, different games entirely and inject them into other games. Like you could see Far Cry in a lot of their Assassins, their more current Assassin's Creed games, I think. And like, there's a balancing act there, and I don't know what the right, like they're trying to do the impossible. They're trying to allow you to do whatever you want, but also deliver a compelling campaign with a story. And that's kind of hard to do. So I haven't gotten that far into it because I literally got to the village and then wandered off into the mountains. And that's where I am right now, in the mountains.
But I love that. That is how I love playing these kinds of games. And the thing that I like most about the last few Assassin's Creeds, and Immortals Fenyx Rising has this as well, is that my curiosity is always rewarded. There's always a there, right? There's always an interesting destination when I go, oh, I wonder what's at the top of that mountain. Oh, something interesting is at the top of that mountain, or something valuable, something that makes my little excursion, my little detour worthwhile. And that is what I love about an open world. I want there to be things placed in interesting places that when I go, ooh, is there a thing or a path around that way? And then yes, and then yes, and then, oh my gosh, a cool thing is here.
Yeah. I love all that. And I think Valhalla, from what I've played of it, does that well. I guess for me, as I'm reading some stuff in chat and kind of thinking through it, like, I think Spider-Man Miles Morales is tonally consistent in the open world things you're doing. I think the first Spider-Man game too largely is. Witcher 3, talking about cyberpunk, Witcher 3, I mean, Geralt in a bath, like there's intercourse and all of and silliness and drunken intoxicated missions and this, that, and the other, but I think it guides you through it in a way that doesn't make it feel forced. And sometimes I feel like Ubisoft games on occasion, maybe it is because it's the total freedom which I can encounter many of these things, they come across feeling odd. I almost wish that they would make an Agents of Mayhem or a
Ooh, I don't know about that.
What's the other the one that came before that?
I know what you're talking about.
The Volition games.
Mercenaries? Not Mercenaries.
Prometheus. I'm just curious. I wonder if they went like full tilt, because I really liked a lot of, I think, Far Cry 5, but also was super serious, right? That was like Christianity, patriotism, all of this death cult stuff, but also like, I'm on a biplane with a hillbilly and a rocket launcher and a bear with a machine gun. And it's like, what's happening? What's happening? Super fun. I'm curious what they would do if they just unleashed from any tonal seriousness. Saints Row. Thank you.
Yeah. Saints Row. Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what would a Fortnite game look like coming from Ubisoft? If they were just like, here's everything. We've emptied our bag into
a sandbox. Hyperscape's their
Hyperscape. I was going to say it looks like Tom Clancy's not Rainbow Six, but the other one that they Ghost Recon. That's Ghost Recon is their Fortnite, basically.
Yeah, it's got everything. So I think Valhalla is easy to recommend. I imagine that it might actually click with more people than Immortals Fenyx Rising, because it is, grounded. I think while I find Immortals Fenyx Rising to be tonally consistent, I could see the humor just bouncing people. Like, I really like Airplane. Other people really like Top Secret. Both great old movies. You can't go wrong. But I think, Valhalla, it does what it does very, very well. I'm curious, Jeff, as I've only played it on PC and I kind of described the character models as looking fine, I'd love to hear your graphic comparison between Series X and 3080 Ultra Wide.
Well, that new patch that just came out for consoles.
Oh, console. Okay.
Yeah, that corrected a lot of the issues that I was experiencing when I first played it, the screen tearing and stuff. I guess there's reports that it isn't completely gone, but since the patch happened, I haven't noticed any. I have to say it compares pretty favorably to my 3080, the Series X. And also I should say that the patch that came out feels like a massive improvement in stability and frame rate. The game seems way smoother, and they added the ability to switch between performance and enhancement, or whatever they call it, now, and it just, the high frame rate just looks so good. But I'm really impressed. I thought the PC version would be a huge improvement and on Ultra or whatever, and it's pretty similar to the Series X. I think Series X holds its own. That's for cool. Sure.
Yeah, I crush frames with my 30. I mean, it is smoke. I do find that, like, I think my GPU is, like, hotter than, it's not hot, but I'm like, ooh,
super
cool. I'm stressing this thing.
It's super cool that they have built into their engine that thing at the pause menu where it shows you a graph of your frame rate and everything. It's like, well, that's slick. I like that.
Anyway. I know we're kind of going along. The last thing I want to talk about is just this. I bought a Backbone, the Backbone One. Brian, did I see you? Were you tweeting about this also?
Yeah. So I actually just wrote something on my personal blog about it and the Kishi.
The Razer.
Yeah. And it's like, they both bring something to the table, but I really wish I could take both of them and smash them together. And then I'd have the perfect controller, I think.
Yeah. So they are both controllers that are built for your phone. They kind of envelop it. They, you know, stretch and slap onto it. The Backbone is currently iOS only. Razer makes an Android version as well. They're both about $100 on iOS. The Backbone One comes with software that is super slick. Like, it's how they sell it, and I will happily say it. It turns your iPhone into a console. Like, it has a dedicated button for screenshot, for video. When you put it in, it launches. You can hit a button to go right to, like, your home, like the PS button on the console that takes you to the Backbone home that shows all the games you have on your phone that support controller, like jump back into Call of Duty Mobile, go play some, oh my God, Castlevania. It was like $1. Children of Light. It's like negative $1. They, like, paid you to get it on iOS. and it's there in a really slick interface with all of your games. And to me, I've only played with the Razer Kishi. I've not owned one. But the Backbone, to me, I like the ergonomics of it. It feels more like a Switch with the kind of the extended handles that go down a little bit. It doesn't quite feel as rigid as a Switch because it is two pieces that are then, you know, hugging your iPhone, but it's not as solid even as a Switch. Like, you could definitely stress it in a frustrating moment. But I absolutely love it. My only knocks against it aren't really against it at all. It's one, that Apple still doesn't show you what games support a controller outside of Apple Arcade, which is ridiculous that I still need to go to a third-party site to be like, does this one support controllers? On Apple Arcade, it shows you, but on regular games, it doesn't. Two, as far as right now, Luna does not seem to work with it. At least for me, it doesn't recognize a controller, which I think is odd because everything else it seems to. And that's it. I've played so much of Assassin's Creed on my phone through GeForce Now with my Backbone in bed late at night. It has a lightning pass through for charging. It has a headphone jack if you don't want to use Bluetooth headphones. I love it. I love it so much.
Headphone jack's a biggie. Like, you can use standard headphone jack. You don't have to, you know, worry about it being USB.
That's huge. Or
fiber. Yeah, it's great. I think it's funny. I interviewed the CEO of Backbone, and he straight up said, like, we created a device to market our software. Like, and I think the device is very good, but their software, you said it, it's like so slick.
So good.
Have you messed around with the editing features they have built into it?
Just briefly. And then same with just briefly with the friends list, because I'm like always been so low on. Yeah. I said I liked you, Brian. Okay.
I know. Right. Exactly.
Just briefly.
It has this thing when you're trying, so you could do these little clips. And it presents your video that you captured, and it has like a little fever chart thing like above the video that shows spikes in where action was happening, which I think is it's so cool. It's like an AI thing that they created. So if you want to sort of just, you don't know, like you recorded an hour video and you have no idea where it was interesting, you just look at that chart and then you can like zoom in onto that area and then clip out something. Yeah, it's very cool. I would say the Razer's controller, I feel like the thumbsticks are a little better. They're a little taller, and I feel slightly more responsive. But the whole thing, because it can condense, which is also, I guess, a good thing. You know, you can kind of fold it in on itself, so it's smaller for storage. But because of that, when you're playing, if you start to mess around with it, which I can't help but do, it's kind of wiggly. Like
the razor?
Yeah. And the backbone isn't. It's pretty – I mean, I know you said there's a little flex there, but like the razor –
backbone doesn't shrink as small as the razor. So I think it has a backbone. It's yes, like a little more rigid.
Right. And so you can – if you were to take that while you're playing and sort of, you know, stress the handles – on the backbone, there's a tiny bit of give. On the Keisha, I keep forgetting what it's called. It's the Razer controller. There's a ton. It's like really all over the place. But again, if you're playing normally, you wouldn't notice that. It's just once you notice it, if you're me, then you keep doing it.
Right. Yeah, I'm super impressed. Like, and especially for like GeForce Now, I think I'm going to play a lot of Cyberpunk that way. Like, if I'm able to, like, that's the plan. It's just like, do, and again, this goes back to Ubisoft Connect too, and just cross progression. And of course I love the cloud, but like, yeah, I'm going to sit down and do a big meaty story mission in Valhalla at my computer, but I want to play, I'm just going to go explore now and grind and do all the stuff. And all that just comes over all that experience. It's great. I love it.
Very cool. All right. Well, we're running long, but I do want to real quickly do a little bit VR time. I got to talk about a new VR release that happened this week. It is a, I believe, free upgrade to Pistol Whip, which is one of, I think, the best VR experiences out there. You can play it on Quest. You can play it on any of the headsets on PC, of course.
PSVR also.
PSVR as well. Yes, right. PSVR. Although I don't know how good the tracking handles that game, but
I haven't played it. Confident. I just know you can play it.
Yes, it is available on that platform. I have confidence in Cloudhead Games, one of the best VR developers. They do the gallery games as well. So good. Pistol Whip is phenomenal. It's kind of this mashup between something like a Beat Saber and it's Beat Saber with guns, basically. It's like a mashup between Beat Saber and Super Hot is how a lot of people have described it, which I think is accurate. But up till this point, it had just been a cool song in a really cool virtual environment, moving at a pace, trying to get all the bad guys before they get you. You know, it's a big shooting gallery, but you're moving through it. You're not even controlling your movement. You're just going, and to the music, to the beat, there are enemies that pop out from all these places and you got to shoot them before they shoot you. Super fun, really cool, a variety of levels, a variety of music. But now they just released a campaign, which adds story elements. It adds a whole bunch of new graphics and new songs that bring you through this sci-fi story of this person who, you know, is breaking out of this environment, getting augmented and having to defeat these android robot stuff. The story itself is cool. It's cool. And it's presented with some great art and really cool voiceover narration. But just the fact that there is a story at all completely elevates the experience to me. For some reason, just having a structure, just having a campaign to play through brings me through the experience in a way that the standalone musical levels didn't. Even though I played the crap out of that game and loved it, I still am just overjoyed to move through the game. And each level sort of has new elements that are informed by the story. Like this, I think the second level, they steal your ammo. So you have to defeat all the enemies just by punching them, just by smacking them. And you have to dodge all of their shots at you. So it's more of like this crazy, you know, bullet hell kind of Neo in the Matrix bending over backward, avoiding all the gunshots thing. Because you're defenseless. You know, you're just having to get through there as fast as possible. Cool ideas, great new graphics, completely elevates Pistol Whip to me into a absolute must have VR experience. Christian, have you tried this yet?
No, I updated it. I got my Oculus out and my Oculus was like, you haven't used me in a long time. And I was like, I got it. I know. You know what time of year it is, Oculus? Do you have any idea? Just relax. So it's there. They've been great with just other non-narrative levels too. Like the free content added to Pistol Whip has been phenomenal. And I'm also, I won't lie, I've watched a lot of Tetris World Championships.
Well, Pistol Whip 2089 is a huge recommendation for me. If you got a Quest 2 or really any headset, if you have any headset, you should be playing this game. And you should check out 2089. I think you'll love it. It's really one of the best VR games. And Cloudhead continues to wow me. So there you go. All right. Let me thank our final sponsor here, which is Brooklinen. Oh, my sheets. We just washed our sheets 2 nights ago. And my goodness, crawling into crisp, freshly laundered Brooklinen sheets. It's the best. It's the best. It's the best. You know that they are the home of the internet's favorite sheets, my favorite sheets. But guess what? They're also doing towels now. I just got the new fluffy towels. They're like super absorbent, high-end towels. I got them for my kids, and they love them. They like curling up inside the towels when they get out of the bath because they're these like incredibly fluffy, very comfortable. It's like being wrapped up in a, you know, in a hug, in a wonderful hug. It gives your daily routines a little something extra with varying levels of plushiness. The towel of your dreams is waiting to wrap you up. It's certainly wrapping up my kids. And with all your extra time at home, probably a good idea to invest in a little extra softness and absorbency. I got to tell you, they are so soft. They are so soft. My kids absolutely love them. I got to get some for myself now because I'm jealous. To be honest, I did get them for myself, and then the kids just liked them so much that they now are the kids' towels. So, Daddy, we want the plushy ones. Daddy, we want the soft ones. Brooklinen is the perfect place to find all the comforts for home, including ultra-soft towels, and they are so confident in their product that everything comes with a lifetime warranty. You use promo code DLC for 10% off your first order at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com. Promo code DLC at checkout. Try them. I think you're going to like it. You deserve it. You deserve the plushiest towel, the softest hug. Let Brooklinen give you a soft hug. Brooklinen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. All right, we do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. Brian Crescente, thank you so much for being here, sir. It's such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for having me, as always. It's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the things you do online.
Well, you can find me at Pad and Pixel. That's just spelled out, Pad and Pixel. That's my private website, or I guess it's not private because I just told everybody about it. personal is what I meant to say. Also, I have two podcasts now. One is called Long-Legged Beasties. It's all about horror movies. And the other is called Bits in Bricks, and it is all about Lego video games. And also, of course, you can catch me on Twitter at Crescente B, as in Brian.
All right. Christian Spice, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, if you're allowed to stand 6 feet away from me, you can hear me passive-aggressively trying to reinforce to my kids that the plural of Lego is Lego, despite their insistence to add an S on the end of it. It is a fight.
They're Lego bricks. It's Lego bricks.
It's Lego bricks, Lego group, and don't you forget it.
I will not let them. Like, have you seen our Legos? And I'll be like, I have not seen your Lego. Come at me, kid. Twitter's the best way, at Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R. My plan is to start streaming some cyberpunks when it shows up. So I'm very excited to, dive in on that. And then I posted, this past week, you can find them up on Twitter, but showing off Luna and, GeForce Now and kind of bouncing between showing off the backbone and playing with that. It's, the future's a wild place. Also, total aside, I love the way Pistol Whip was like, 2077, hold my beer, 2089. Yeah. But Twitter's the best way, at Spicer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, and I have several other shows for you to check out if you're so inclined, including a movie and TV review show called The Slash Filmcast. We're doing Mank this week, which is the new David Fincher. You can find that at slashfilmcast.com. I also do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns alongside Anthony Carboni. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. And my long form storytelling Dungeons and Dragons show, where I'm the DM making up the story for the cast. Boy, I'm proud of that show. You should check it out. It's called The Dungeon Run. You can find it on, well, anywhere you get audio, anywhere you get your podcast, you can get it, the audio version. It's kind of like listening to an audio book. I recommend the audio version. It's great. There's live music, original music composed. It's amazing, on the fly, by these two wonderful musicians. Anyway, check that out. The Dungeon Run, anywhere you get podcasts, or you can watch it on YouTube by searching for The Dungeon Run there, or live when we record Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific time at caffeine.tv/The Dungeon Run. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Brian, do you have a recommendation to help people get through their week?
Yes, two books. Paranisi, which is the, it's been out for a little bit, but it was written by, it was written by Susanna Clarke, who wrote Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Oh, yeah.
Great book. Very, very intriguing book. I highly recommend it. And that got me on this fix where I started reading a bunch of books around different types of mythology. And that led me to Circe, which I just finished. That one's written, by the person who wrote the Song of Achilles, if you have heard of that. But Circe basically tells a story of Circe from Greek mythology from her perspective. Super cool book. I highly recommend it.
Awesome. That's Circe and Piranesi. Great, great recommendations. Christian, what about you?
It's Zeus and Prometheus. One is the Greek god and the other is a not very good alien prequel. Leslie Odom Jr., a.k.a. Aaron Burr, a.k.a. Got Milk, has a Christmas album that is out. Leslie played Aaron Burr in Hamilton and is just, in my opinion, a phenomenal performer, just scene stealer in every regard. And his Christmas album is phenomenal, as you would expect it to be. Dude's got pipes. So if you're looking for a new Christmas album, also I'll throw out Mariah Carey's Apple TV Plus Christmas special here as well. If you're looking for a new Christmas album to get into the rotation, I highly recommend Leslie Odom Jr.'s The Christmas Album.
Very, very cool. My recommendation is a show that's been, I guess it's been around a little while, but somebody on Twitter recommended it to me, and it is my particular sensibility, i.e. goofball. It's a show on Amazon Prime called The Goes Wrong Show. This is a British show, basically an amateur theater group. Every single episode, it's a half an hour, and it's an amateur theater group putting on a one-act play every week of a different play. And everything goes wrong. It's basically like the third act of Noises Off, which I adore and performed. But without any setup, it's just like everything goes wrong. They're trying to do, first episode's a horror one. The second episode's like a World War II drama. And everything goes wrong. Everything breaks. The actors mess up. But it's done really, really smartly and very, very funny. It's called The Goes Wrong Show. I recommend it. We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This one comes from Ryan. Ryan says, "Hey guys, I have a parting gift suggestion. Every time I hear Jeff talk about Mr. Show, which is my favorite sketch comedy show of all time, it is one of my favorite shows of all time too. If you like that show, I think you should leave on Netflix. It's only one season and the episodes are under 20 minutes, but I laugh the entire time. I rewatched each episode at least a dozen times during this tough year. Thanks, and I love the podcast." Thank you, Ryan. I am also a fan of I Think You Should Leave. There's some classic. There's a sketch about a toilet with a tiny hole that makes me cry laughing every time I watch it. So yes, I dig that as well. I Think You Should Leave on Netflix. If you'd like your suggestion read on the show, please send it to us to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Brian Crescente and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those cool bumpers. Thanks to our live chat room for correcting us numerous times and making the show better in real time. We appreciate you. And thanks to each and every one of you who listen to the show. We'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.